announcing to everyone that Jesus is Lord and Christ. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Things that we do not do well in the Christian life is lament. If you go through the Psalter, that is the book of Psalms, God's songbook that he actually inspired, you don't just find praise songs, and you don't just find endlessly repetitious praise songs that do nothing for your soul. What you find is deep cries at times in life of lament over things that are very difficult to understand, over the loss of a loved one suddenly, the pain of sickness, the pain of this life, all the hardships that often come with it and that are confusing for the believer if he has a God he believes who is sovereign over it all and who cares for him and who loves him. Why does God allow this to happen? Why does God do the things that he does? These sort of deep cries are all throughout the Psalter. Today on Abounding Grace, you're going to hear Psalm 77, which is really a cry of lament as it leads us to an answer. And this is important. We recently faced in our congregation here a death of a young man with a family. He died in a plane crash. And this was absolutely devastating for many of us. And we needed an answer from the Lord. And God had not been silent about this. The Lord has given us inspired psalms that show the same struggle of God's people in the past. But you see, it's when we face reality. It's when we face the reality of these deaths and hardships in life and the reality of what sin has brought to this world that we're prepared to properly listen to his answer. We can't just sugarcoat everything. We can't just make everything a facade. Not everything is about painting ourselves and painting a picture-perfect life artificially without really looking at the messiness of it all, the pain of it all, and then seeing how God has answered us in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. That's what we're going to look at today from Psalm 77. Thanks for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. You can find us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. The number's 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So many ways to connect with us. We'd love to hear from you. Here is now the message from Psalm 77. This is part one. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Well, I don't think that any of us would disagree that one of our worst fears in life is losing those who are closest to us, those sitting next to us who are our soulmates. I have a hard time, of course, with why. I have a hard time seeing how there could ever be any good in this. I really don't see it. I try to find an answer to that, and I just can't find it. How does it fit at all that God is love? And that God has a shepherding care for his people. Did it escape him? It's an overwhelming feeling in our home, at least this week. This must have been a mistake. Ultimately, we don't believe that. But it sure feels that way. It sure feels that way. There's one question, of course, as you open this psalm and you begin to think about it, I think the sort of capstone of all the questions here, it's this question of, has God forgotten to be gracious? Everything will build toward that question, and the solution, of course, will turn his heart of faith toward the preserving, gracious, magnificent works of God for his people. This is where the psalm ends on that note. But today I want to walk with you through this psalm that answers these kind of perplexing circumstances of life that we just don't have answers for and have no idea what to say in the moments like this. The psalmist, of course, in this case is Asaph, and there really is nobody quite like him in the Psalter because he's just so straightforward. He says exactly how he's feeling, and it sometimes makes us nervous and a little bit on edge because he seems to be pushing limits in the way that he's questioning God. He genuinely struggles, though. He genuinely struggles to understand something that has happened, something that is absolutely perplexing to think about. Something has happened to him. Something terrible has happened, and he really is agonizing and grieving with ultimate grief. It's a psalm of grief. It's a psalm of lament. He begins this way, a deep lament to the Lord. And keep in mind, these were inspired songs. I've tried to say this over and over. Life's not always a praise song. When congregations come and they gather and you're going through this kind of stuff, it's this that's real. It's not being taken into artificial land of saying things overly repetitious that don't do anything for your soul. I cried out to God with my voice, aloud to God, and he will hear me. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. No comfort. None. That's how I feel. He was going through some kind of distress, and it was at this point that he was having a hard time. He could not, within his bones, within his heart, he could not pray. The words inside his heart were so utterly painful, he couldn't keep them in. And he's expressing it now. It's building. You'll notice a building in the psalm. He was weary of holding them in. You get the sense that it burst out of him, the agony, the cry, the sense of, why, O Lord? What had happened? I have no idea. I don't think it's unlike the grief that's hit us. The closer you were to this family, the greater the grief is. But it's someone you're close to that this will happen to in life, and you'll be here. It's the kind of thing, as I've said, that stops us in our tracks. It's utterly overwhelming. I was talking with a man this week who was expressing all his hardships in life, and he asked how I was doing, and I told him what happened, and he stopped, and he says, well, that makes everything I just said very ridiculous. My problems really are nothing. Feel the pain of this for a moment. Your son, your daughter, your wife, your husband, taken in what is certainly a harsh providence. Not only are priorities corrected, but you're overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed with grief at this moment. You don't even know what to do. How in the world is there an answer to that? And that's real, isn't it? That's not playing anymore. How does this fit? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. How does this fit? He leads me beside green pastures. Well, looking at it and everything that we think about and the pain that this brings, I don't see it. It really does make no sense as to everything we believe about the goodness of God. This is something you can theoretically preach about suffering. I preached on suffering early in my ministry, and I didn't know what I was talking about. I've had a little bit of taste now. Seeing my own father's death in a very painful way. I remember after the service when I preached his death, his funeral, which was a terrible death, someone walked up to me and said, well, that was kind of depressing to hear. I knew this man. This man was living a fairy tale life. He had never had anything happen to him. And I said, when you see suffering and you see real suffering, then you'll know what I'm talking about. At this moment, we're sort of ready to hear. It's not the superficial, painted-up existences we try to create of the good life. Maybe that's just a crucial part of this. Do we have ears? Has God got our attention? All of us need to ask it. But what Asaph is really wrestling with here in this particular psalm is a sense of God's complete absence in the whole thing. It's one thing that he could not reconcile in his mind was the single fact that in light of whatever he was facing, it seemed as if God was not present. Where was he? It seemed as if he turned his back and walked away. He uses the word forsaken for a reason. He felt forsaken. So he describes this in the wake of this awful thing that has happened. And he says, in the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. You get this graphic image of a man alone on his bed in the wee hours of the night, unable to sleep because of this tragic circumstance overtaken him with inner pain. He has turned to weeping and to cries and to pleas to God in prayer, and his hands are just up. Up. What is it? What is this? He can't close them because there's no answer. His soul refuses comfort. It's because of this one issue in the psalm. An issue that we all know very well, an issue that has often perplexed us in life, something we simply can't figure out, the toughest thing to stomach. It's not the question of whether this thing happened by chance. It's not that question. It's not the question that this thing escaped God. He has a better theology than that. He has a much better understanding of sovereignty than that. It is the fact that God's sovereign. It is the fact that he holds everything in his hands. Why does God allow things that are seemingly hurtful to his own people? Well, we could understand it with the wicked. Why, if he's great and sovereign and good and loving to his people, does he remain silent then in the midst of this? And there just simply seems to be no answer. We have to fend for ourselves through it. Silence. Silence. You see, I think he's saying this to us. Even the thought of God troubles me. You see it? Why is he saying that? Because of his seeming inaction. Why would he who controls heaven and earth allow a man so rock solid in his faith? A man with a young family. Why take someone so full of life? Why somebody who's such a blessing to us? Why somebody who is actively involved in the church, who loves worship, who wouldn't miss? Why him? I remembered God, verse 3, and I was troubled. I complained, and my spirit was overwhelmed. The Lord himself, who should be the object of his great delight, has become the object of his great discomfort. The thought of God, of thinking about God, hurt him. Every range of emotion is going through him, from anger to frustration to sorrow to lament. If he upholds the universe in his hand and created all things and gives us life and breath, could he not have angled the planes differently? Wouldn't have taken much. Just a little. And we wouldn't be here. Could he not, in his ultimate power, fix that situation? Why did he appear to turn his back? And we have to now figure out and think horrible thoughts about this whole thing. What good is there in his own people suffering? Where is God? He's not fine. His relationship is not great. He is seriously wrestling with God. And if you think this is strong, it gets more intense. This lament grows in verse 4 to a deeper lament with his hand outstretched, his hand remains open, and then he progresses. You, verse 4, hold my eyelids open. What do you mean? You're not even giving your beloved sleep. Notice the perspective of God's sovereignty in this psalm. I have no sleep and I have no words. And he says, I can consider the days of old, the years of long ago. I said, let me remember my song in the night. Let me meditate in my heart. It used to be good. And my spirit is searching. Will the Lord spurn forever and never again be favorable? Has his steadfast love forever ceased? Are his promises at an end for all time? Notice the heaping up of questions here. Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his compassion? Sometimes looking back is the worst, because you're looking back to the good times, the golden years, the thoughts of when everything was so wonderful, and all of a sudden whatever has happened, that's gone. It's gone. It seems that God has turned his back and walked away. This is what he's describing. And looking back in former places does not bring comfort. Looking back at his former life before this thing does not bring comfort. It's agony. Does he care? Is he angry with me? Why did he do this? He is genuinely honest about all this. It was a point at which he had to arrive. It brought him to the brink of despair, faced with the most important questions of life. Is there really a God who does care out there? Is there a God who hears me? This says no. This says no. It's interesting, however, that in the midst of one of the deepest laments and cries in the Psalter, he gave us something at the beginning. Notice what he says. Right at the beginning, a little glimmer of faith. I cried aloud to God, and he will hear me. He has not let that go. There's a little glimmer of faith there. He's crushed, he's broken, he's emptied, but he still has faith. It may be faith as of a mustard seed. He still has faith. And he believes that God will answer him, and that's the question of the psalm. That's the great question, is how does God answer us at moments like this? What does God do? How does he give an answer when this kind of tragedy and this kind of emotion and these kind of questions are at the fore and at the forefront? What is the answer? And what he does at this point, I believe, is so important. If you've ever come to a place of confusion over God himself, this is the psalm for you. This is the psalm to see and see what happened to this man, and how could he ever have gotten out of such a pit? He has one question now that is really dominating the second half of the psalm. One question that he's thinking about, something that's in his head, is how did God's people ever get through these things in the past? And how is how I'm feeling and what I'm experiencing true of God? And was it true for them too? Did they go through this? How did they get through it? What does the past say? The past, not of my experiences of all the joys of life, the past of how God helped his people. That's what the question is. What was God's help of his people before? And it's in this dark moment, alongside of the sufferings of God's people in the past, now that he begins to muse and to think and remember. Remember, amuse means never to think. No think, not think. We're good at that. This makes us think. We may not understand why something happens the way that it does, and certainly we only see dimly, but we see looking obviously from earth horizontally. We can't look at the big picture. We only can look at this moment that's right in front of us, and who can see it all? Who knows the whole picture? Who knows the whole story? We only see from the point at which we're stopped. But in others, we can see the whole story. Verse 10 is the turning point of the psalm. I said, this is my anguish. You'll notice there, he says in verse 10, And I said, I will appeal to the right hand of the Most High. This is my infirmity, he goes on to describe here. This is my hardship. The first six verses, there are 18 occurrences. If you study the structure of this psalm, 18 occurrences of the first person singular pronoun. In other words, I cried out, I remembered, I complained, I'm so troubled, I cannot speak, I've considered, I call to remembrance, and after all these I's comes the question, has God forgotten? Has God forgot grace? Has he shut up his compassions? I think it's wrong to criticize the psalmist for the I's. That might have been how I read that before going through suffering myself. But I think it's wrong to criticize the psalmist, as often done, for his eyes. It was a real experience for him. These were real questions for him. This was a real pain for him. And the psalmist is showing us, of course, that he found an answer by looking to the Lord's mighty workings in history. That's where he begins to see the answer. That's where he begins to survey and see it. That from verse 13 to the end of the psalm, there are 21 mentions of God with no personal references at all. So that structure is important, isn't it? Structure is very important. What did God do for others in the midst of this? How did God help other people? How has God helped others who've gone before, who suffered in such a way? And so he begins to see how God worked in the past, and in light of the present circumstance, he comes to this conclusion that if God is unchanging and God is omniscient and omnipotent, he has always dealt with his people in a certain way. He's always answered them in a certain way. He's always helped them in a certain way. And I should be able to see that. I will remember, verse 10. I will remember, I will appeal to this, to the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember, he says, your wonders of old. I will ponder all your work to meditate on all your mighty deeds. Faith is now starting to, it's beginning to overcome. I don't think this is a quick process, and it's different for everyone, but he's getting up. There are two things he can't get out of his head. Two stories you know. Two events of the past, of God's help. In verses 16 through 20, he's thinking about one episode. God had delivered his people out of the land of Egypt. Remember what happened? He brought them to the very Red Sea, and before them were the waters, the barrier to their path to the promised land. And in Exodus 14, remember, they turned around, and there came Pharaoh marching with all of the armies, and the Egyptians, we read, were marching after them, and it said, and this is stuff we read right over, they feared greatly, and the people cried out to the Lord. And Moses said, they said to Moses, it is because there's no graves in Egypt that you've taken us away to die in the wilderness. What have you done to us? You hear it? You brought us out and we're dying. What have you done? What has the Lord done to us? No weapons, backed up against the sea. Here come the enemy. And they're confused. And notice the question, why would God bring us out here to die? Why does he do that? Why does he save us to die like this? They had felt nothing but fear. And God led them through in a moment of great despair. And God delivered them.
Thank you for listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.